Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to our newest season of Humane Podcast in 2021. Humane is your first look at the startups and industry titans that are leading and disrupting ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education. I am your host, David Jacobovich, and this is Humane. If you like this episode, remember to subscribe and leave a review. Now, on to our show. Welcome back, listeners, to Humane, your first look at technology that is expanding how humans augment with machines, developer tools, and the world of data science. Today on the show, I have Ido Liberty, who's the founder and CEO of Pinecone. Ido comes from a tremendous background of working in technology at big tech and startups alike, and is releasing his newest version of the Pinecone technology. Ido, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
Well, Ido, just to start us off, can you share with the listeners a little bit about yourself and what you've built in technology throughout your career that led you to be a founder for Pinecone?
Sure. So I spent most of my career being an academic. I did my PhD and postdoc in computer science and applied math, working on high-dimensional geometry and functional analysis, which at the time I didn't know it, but were kind of the mathematical foundations for what for machine learning, really, and deep learning. In some sense, all deep learning models are high-dimensional functions. And so if you learn, you know, functional analysis, you end up being really well-equipped to deal with machine learning theory, which was very happenstance for me, because that ended up taking off like a rocket, like everybody else knows. During my postdoc, I started building my first startup, which we later sold to Visio. That was a real-time video search solution that relied a lot on vector search and vector similarity search, which we'll talk about a lot in this podcast. Yeah, and then I joined Yahoo to be a research director and lead efforts in research there on anything that has to do with big data, from ads to spam detection to you name it, recommendation engines and search. And then I moved to AWS, and I helped build an organization called Amazon AI that built a lot of different applications and platforms for machine learning, including SageMaker and all the AI solutions that you see on your AWS console that came out of that organization. That's it. And 2.5 years ago, I started Pinecone with the mission of creating the next generation data platform for vector. It is a vector database, but to enable search and similarity and recommendation at scale for everyone.
I think it's so exciting that you spent a good portion of your career building at preeminent big tech companies. You know, I remember at the time that you were at Yahoo, they were leading some of the largest research projects. You know, we think today of researchers at all the top ML, data science, NLP, AI conferences that we see, Microsoft, AWS, GCP, Baidu, and others. And often we forget that Yahoo was leaving that. They were a core part of the industry, had a tremendous amount of engineers all over the world working on that. And it's amazing to see that you were there building this at the big data wave, which of course evolved into the new data science ML-driven wave that we've seen in the last few years with all that growth, with the cloud and all these products. So I'm sure you've seen a lot of interesting things over the years that informed your decision to become a founder again.
Yeah, 100%. So you're right. People don't remember that, kind of going back in time, Yahoo Labs was an organization that was started by Prabhakar Raghavan, who literally wrote the book on randomized algorithms. He's a Stanford professor who became, he's now, I think, one of the, top 10 people at Google. I don't know if he's top three or top 10, he built, together with Ron Brockman, Yoel Marek, and others, really one of the best research organizations in the world back then. And I remember kind of the to get in, you basically had to qualify to be a professor. If you couldn't get into like a top tier university, you couldn't become a scientist at Yahoo back then. And a lot of the way that people think about machine learning was invented there. And so you're right. If you dig research papers on machine learning and data science going back, 5, 6, 7 years ago, half of them would have Yahoo authors on them. So yes, there was a lot of really exciting things happening there.
And then after that, as you mentioned, either you spent a few years at AWS and got to see a lot of those core products, both from a research perspective and then a practical AI perspective, got to get built out on the cloud. I remember for myself, having worked with enterprise customers at my previous companies, we were building and helping consulting on data science and ML projects. And I remember when AWS was just coming out with SageMaker, and we're like, it's experimental. And then suddenly today in 2021, I mean, SageMaker's great, right? Like there's really great products there. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your experience, being on both the research and practical side when you were at AWS as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like how being a scientist and building applications and building platforms are so different. It's kind of like, for me, it's just by analogy. I mean, kind of a scientist, if you're looking at some technical achievement as being atop of a mountain, then a scientist is trying to like hike there. They're trying to be the first person to the summit, right? When you build an application, you kind of have to build a road there. You have to be able to drive there with a car. And when you're building a platform on AWS or at Pinecone, you have to like build a city there. you have to really completely cover it, right? And so, for me, the experience of building platforms at AWS was transformational because the way you think about problems is completely different. It's not about proving that something is possible. It's building the mechanisms that make it possible always for in any circumstance. And that's very, very different.
It's interesting that, doing all the research that you discovered at Yahoo and AWS informed building Pinecone and what it is today and what it's evolving into. And, having looked through your mission statement and seeing Pinecone as a fully managed vector database, I think it's so smart and clever because I think back to a lot of these competitions we see today for students who are solving an ML or, at these conferences and they're constantly tuning. I want to get that extra 1% improvement using a certain algorithm. But when you really think about it, it all comes back to the data and how you structure or unstructure that data. Having a little bit more or having a better organized to search, that can make all the difference.
Yeah. I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with tuning models and getting your, your accuracies, a quarter of a percent higher or something. That's great. I mean, it needs to be done. And there are great tools for it. But like you said, in the end, a lot of it is about the data. In my experience, it's mostly about the data. And when I need to be able to know if you know, something is spam or not, if I'm like a spam, you know, classification server, I can run an email or an image that I got through a classifier and try to get an answer. But hey, you know what? I think it would be a lot better for me if what I could do is just ask a database, you know, give me the you know, 20 other emails or other images that are the most like it, you know, and were they spam? You know, were what were they, right? And so that doesn't look like a model. That is a retrieval engine. That's a search engine. And that's really like a vector database. That's what Pinecone is. So you can, a lot of applications that require and work with these vector embeddings and features need this mechanism. And that cuts across not only similarity search for something like spam classification, but also to recommendation and semantic search over text and so on. And the interesting thing is that a lot of these models that people train, what they do is actually convert data, complex data, whether it be text or images or anything else really, to these high dimensional vectors. And once you have them in that form, usually called embeddings, you can then feed them into Pinecone, and then you can start really acting on them and interacting with them in real time, which makes a whole set of machine learning applications so much more powerful and so much more capable.
When you think of the layperson, right, they see an image, spam or ham, or spam not spam, right, yeah, or dog or cat, and you think it's magic, but there is underlying mathematics that's occurring to perform these calculations. And today we're moving beyond recommendations. As you've described in your research, we're moving beyond the leaps in recommendation work from companies like AWS, Yahoo, Google, Spotify, Facebook, and Pinterest. Now this change is moving to the use of vectors and vector similarity search. Can you unpack for the audience why you think we're at this inflection point now today?
So I think that the inflection point is not in the change of the technology, but rather in the change of depth and investments that companies are making into building those solutions. Mm-hmm. So let me explain. The companies that you named already use vector search, already use vector similarity, already built in-house solutions to be able to do the kind of recommendation that you experience as a user, right? And they do a very good job at it. What they have under the hood is a technology that most companies don't have. That's what Pinecone is. And so up until very recently, those companies had two options. Either they had to invest like and go all in and have a dedicated engineering team to just build the infrastructure to be able to do advanced recommendation, or they would go and buy some off-the-shelf, you know, retail recommendation product, right? That does everything for them. So they really don't have to deal with any of this. And today, I see this very, very strong motion by a lot of technology savvy companies, whether they be retailers or text-based search solutions or analytics and so on, to really want to build these things in-house. You know, to say, hey, you know, we hired a handful of scientists. We know how to train models already. We have great tools for it. Can we do more than just buy some off-the-shelf thing? And the answer is almost always yes, right? And it doesn't even take a whole lot of energy to do that. And with something like Pinecone as a backend, it doesn't even take a lot of energy to go to production. And so they find that those like black box solutions, if they want to create like a Pinterest-like experience, they don't have to build Pinterest from scratch. They can, you know, train a few models and use Pinecone and go to production in, you know, a few weeks and not in a few years.
And building any of those networks and any of those systems, there's a lot of data, right? We've seen the rise of data augmentation, data labeling, data generation, synthetic data design. There's data everywhere, and a lot of it's not standardized. It sounds to me that vectors are opening up this new way to retrieve that data. This is known as similarity. Can you talk to us more about what are some of the similarities you've seen or the use cases with Pinecone?
So yeah, I'll use an example. So for example, a very common technique to do what's called question answering is to the following. If I'm going to get a question on my website, say, or by a user of my app, and I want to give them the most appropriate answer. Conceptually easy thing to do is to say, I'll just use my like FAQs. I'll look for the most similar questions I've gotten. And if I have a very similar question, I'll give it you know, this question, the other question's answer. That ends up being pretty efficient, right? But how do you search for other questions that mean the same thing? Do they contain the same words? Maybe, maybe not, you know? And then you go into this like very complicated discussion of like, how do I parse the language and how do I measure similarity and so on? And today with machine learning, you don't really have to do any of that. You have pre-trained NLP models that convert a string, like a sentence in English, to an embedding, to a high-dimensional vector, such that the similarity or either the distance or the angle between them is analogous to the similarity between them in terms of like conceptual similarity, semantic similarity between them. And so I can convert my text into a high-dimensional vector, and I can search my database not for similar sentences in English, but rather to vectors which are, you know, highly correlated with the vector that was generated for the query. And that ends up being A, a lot easier, B, a lot more accurate, because now you don't do text search. You don't try to fit on this word or that. And you don't have to create like super elaborate elastic, you know, search queries. You just use machine learning for it. So that is, you know, maybe an example of how you translate from the real world to a similarity. And similarity in that space is measured either by angle or by distance or by, you know, the dot product, which is the sum of multiplications of the different coordinates. But in the end, you know, those are just mathematical constructs that are simulating what you really want to happen in real life. That's the beauty of machine learning, right?
Oh, I remember those days in the math classes in high school and college, right? We were looking at cosine similarity and geometry and trigonometry, right? Yeah. It's all vectors.
Yeah. That is what the machine learning does. That's the beauty of it. I mean, you can train models that map, you know, sentences that mean roughly the same thing to be highly correlated with each other in their vector representation. And if you train that model well and you are successful, then now you have a vector representation that's very useful, because now two vectors that are aligned correspond to two sentences that mean roughly the same thing. And so now you can search with that.
And so doing the search here is helping with recommendations. It's helping with lookalike audiences. It's helping with getting deeper for businesses to create results that previously would be very challenging to build. As you described, either companies would have to hire full teams. I know today at a single store, I had spoken to one of our leaders who previously worked at an enterprise analytics company. And we were talking about how they were building a use case for search around a specific finance industry. And at one point, they had a team of 30 engineers. All they were doing was, I kid you not, the labeling, the design, the understanding, the modeling, the algorithms, just to get one use case for one industry right. There was so much work, but it sounds like there are better solutions or newer solutions that are being repurposed, such as vector similarity search, that today mean you don't need a team of 30 algorithm developers in-house if you're looking to have some of these solutions.
100%. And we see this across the industry as AI and machine learning is maturing. All the, you know, MLOps, model training themselves, you know, the deep learning networks and all that stuff, they're all great tools and great shortcuts. And Pinecone is one of those, you know. You know, it's an arsenal of tools that make what used to be a 30-person multi-year project to be like a 3-person quarterly project.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And talking about technologies, there's always more tools coming out. There's open source projects. There's functions like you described in MLOps and DevOps. And for all these new AI and ML platforms, where do you see Pinecone fitting in? You mentioned it's a database. You mentioned it's working with vector similarity search. How is it a good solution that companies should be considering today?
Well, if they are experiencing the pain, if they see that they have search problems or recommendation problems that have large amounts of data, then they will know. It's very easy to know that you have a problem. You're in pain, right? And so, yes, if they're trying to search or recommend over a very large collection of objects and they're trying to use machine learning for it, either for semantic search or recommendation or shopping or any of those use cases, almost always Pinecone ends up being a lot easier, a lot faster, and a lot more production ready than what they would build in-house. A lot more functional. We've spent 2.5 years now baking a lot of really great features into Pinecone, and we've just launched a version 2.0 that contains all sorts of filtering capabilities and cost reduction measures and you name it. Those, we've been hard at it for a long time. And I think we've managed to get to build something really compelling that, very few companies, if any, could really pull off.
It's very exciting because, when you think whether you're a startup or you're a Fortune 500 company, chances are you do not want to build a team of 30 algorithm developers, AI specialists, ML engineers, and data scientists and data engineers all together. You need millions of dollars, right? Build this whole team, develop your models, choose your algorithms, build and maintain infrastructure. It's a lot of moving parts, and it's not practical always.
We see more. Even we work with companies with many billions of dollars worth of market cap and huge companies. They could easily mobilize 30 headcounts, but they just don't know that it's not their core value. And today, with the hiring market being what it is, they're like, we can't even hire 30 engineers for this right now. We'd rather mobilize the engineers we have on our core values and our core product and delegate everything that we don't have to build to somebody else who knows how to build it. And so you're right. Some of it is some companies can afford it. But amazingly, a lot of companies that can afford it choose not to because they have better ways to use their capital.
And there's different ways to solve for these problems. Some of them are, of course, use Pinecone. But beyond that, when we think about each one of these, right, choose or develop models, choose algorithms, build and maintain infrastructure, we could unpack all three of them. So this first one, choose or develop models. What can a company do today if they want to choose or develop models?
So, look, I'm a data scientist by training. And so for me, when companies just pick up something random from the web and hope for it to perform, I get the heebie-jeebies.
That code in that Medium article better work.
Exactly. I found some notebook by some guy somewhere. And for some reason, I have high hopes for it. And so, it's good for a prototype. It's good for getting up to speed on your, how do I do this in-house? But one thing that I tell to my customers oftentimes, is why not use some, open source or some pre-baked thing? I'm like, because your data is yours and your customers and you know your application and your business logic 1,000 times better than anybody else. And there's absolutely no reason for you to believe that they will do a better job than you could. And so I'm a great believer in knowing your own data and knowing your own customers and training your own models. It doesn't mean that you have to train them from scratch. It doesn't mean you don't have to use the right tools for it. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. But I'm not a big believer in completely pre-trained, plucked off of a random place in the internet models. I do want to say that there are great models for just feature engineering for objects that don't change so much. So we have language models like BERT and so on that transform text and create great embeddings. And they're a good starting point. I don't think you should stop there, but they're a great starting point. You should take advantage of that. Same thing for image and audio and so on. So yes, by all means, use the right tools and use what's available, but don't buy into the hype. You're still going to have to think about it and train some stuff, in my opinion.
Absolutely. You can even go to Papers with Code. You can go to GitHub. You can grab that code, but definitely check also when it was last updated. Last updated 5 years ago.
Be careful. Yes.
Be careful always. Okay. So that was number one to solve for, right? Choosing or developing models. The second one that you mentioned about challenges is about choosing algorithms, right? There's dozens of options. They all have different parameters and hyperparameters and different data sets and use case. Like you said, you know, in your company, you know the business logic best, especially if you've worked in that industry for 10, 20, 30 years. So if you're trying to solve for choosing algorithms, what should we look into? Should it be experimentation, benchmarking? What do you find important there?
So what do you mean by choosing algorithms? Choosing the, like whether you're choosing the random forest or deep learning or stuff like that? Or what
do you mean by algorithms? Yeah, the big thing that a business stakeholder will tell a data scientist, you know, why did you choose random forest? Why didn't we go with gradient boost? Why didn't we?
Yeah, I always love those discussions. Look, I mean, in the end, as a developer or as a business driver, you have to really care about the results. And so I don't, I really think you should experiment with whatever you can. I do want to say that you should keep it simple. You know, machine learning has come a long way and some fairly simple things work pretty well. And so, yes, you can look at the latest and greatest, transfer reinforcement learning library from Alpha Centauri. But, odds are that a decision tree would do great, or some linear classifier would probably get you most of the way there. And so if I had to say one thing is experiment with what you can, choose the best thing, but make sure that you have some pretty basic solutions in there, and you 9 out of 10 times you'll be surprised at how well they do.
That's great to think really about that number two, the choosing algorithms, that you're right, you could have your Swiss Army knife of algorithms and you'll get pretty far. But even if you choose or develop the models, you choose the algorithms. Number three is the sticky one that a lot of companies struggle with, and I think we saw it in the pandemic, which is building and maintaining infrastructure. I mean, having a DevOps, a cloud ops, a cloud infrastructure team. There's so much going on today, from distributed computing, high availability of resources, consistency, systems going down. We were talking about earlier before the show about a major service that went down that impacts the web. We almost hear about these stories every few months. Be surprised how one service can take so much down. So there's a lot to solve for on building and maintaining infrastructure. What's your take on that area?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the reason for something like Pinecone to exist. It's hard. It's really hard to maintain infrastructure. It's hard to optimize how it works. It's hard to keep it up. And it's never-ending work. It's not something that you build and is done. It's, a live service needs updates, it needs, maintenance, and stuff happens, And so I encourage companies that find good infrastructure to use, definitely to use it. Building in-house should be, taken very, very, very seriously. I mean, I would argue against really building anything that's outside of your core value proposition. If this is not who you are as a company, then don't invest in it, because you'll find yourself, 3 years later and like 20 headcounts in, it's like, why are we doing all of this? And we have, I speak with customers who are in that spot who said, hey, I invested a ton of energy into this thing and it kind of roughly works, but I just don't want to maintain it anymore. I don't want to keep building it. And I have a feature list, from here to I have a feature request that will keep me busy for 5 years. And I just don't want to do that. And so you definitely should look at the right infrastructure for whatever it is you're trying to do.
That's right. And it's always evolving, but it comes down to the old adage, do I really want to fork this branch and maintain my own version, right?
Yeah, it's hard. And I think, if operations is something that kind of people know that it's hard, but they don't know how hard it is until they tried. It's kind of like parenting. You hear it's hard, but then you have a child and you're like, oh shit, this is way harder than people told me. So yes, I think it's one of those things.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so thinking through all of this, this is a lot of the reasons why you built and have scaled Pinecone. You've come out with version 2.0. Can you share more? Tell us about the updated product, the new features. Why are you excited for the new version?
So yeah, I mean, we've been very busy improving Pinecone significantly. it's improved in a thousand different ways, from a new console to a clientless operations and Go and Rust and you know, curl APIs and so on. But the two biggest things that I'm most excited about, A, is filtering. So now it's not enough to find similarity. But if you're a retailer, you have to find similarity between, you know, you want to recommend items, but it's really important for you that you recommend them only if they're in stock or if the price is above or below some threshold. If you're doing similarity search, you want to make sure that you're searching the right corpus of data or maybe just a category and so on. So being able to do both, to kind of fuse together traditional NoSQL type of behavior and search capabilities and similarity search and vector search into the same index is something that took us a very long time to get right. And we're very excited to be able to launch it now, and it's already available. The second thing is cost. You know, people told us, hey, you know, this is really, really, really performant, but hey, we don't really need this to come back in 20 milliseconds. We're happy for this to be like, whatever, like 300-400 milliseconds or even a second. I don't really care if the search is that long. I just want it to be a lot cheaper. And so we actually spent a very significant amount of energy building a hybrid index that is mostly on disk that cuts cost by 10x. And so now we're actually coming out with a new pricing model. People don't see it right now, but by the time this airs, then it will already be public. Our costs are going to be 10 times lower than what they used to be. And so you will be able to achieve 10x as much for the same amount of money with Pinecone they used to up until today, which is very exciting to us, obviously exciting for our customers.
Yeah, minimizing the total cost of ownership is critical. And I can echo your statements for hybrid systems. You know, where I'm at single store, we also work hybrid, and it's so important. We've heard that from customers over the years. You know, if you do everything in memory, right, it's the cost gets up pretty quickly. And if you can build that architecture, which is phenomenal to hear that your team's built that on disk, I mean, that is incredible. There are so few systems out there today that are hybrid. So hats off to you and the engineering team to get that functional.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And thinking more also about the company, love to hear, tell us about Pinecone. Where are you based? Are you in the States? Are you a global company?
We are an American company. We're based mostly out of the Bay Area and New York. We do have also a Tel Aviv office. And that's where we are. We're tri-coastal in that way.
Startup Nation, Startup Alley, and,
and Silicon Valley.
That's
yes,
great.
Exactly.
That's great.
It's all the three places that I call home.
I love them. And, you know, thinking moving forward, you know, what do you see a little bit? Trends or predictions either for the continued product evolution of Pinecone in the next maybe few quarters, if you could tease out for the audience, or a little bit more on the industry around vector similarity search?
So I think you'll see two things. First of all, with Pinecone specifically, we're focused on really only two things: making it easier to use and get value out of Pinecone, and making it cheaper. That's it. I mean, those are the only two things we care about. Like if you can get a ton of value out of it and it doesn't cost you too much, that's it. You're a happy customer, and we're happy to get you there. So that is pretty much sums up all of our focus. In terms of the industry, I think you'll see a lot more happening on vector representation of data, on people working with unstructured data and transacting with it. You know, people have had unstructured data for forever, like images and text and so on. They're mostly just kept in files and stored. They're not really searched through or transacted against, or, you know, there's no SQL over images, right? Well, now you do have it. You know, it's called, you know, it's spoken in the language of vectors. And so you will see a rise in awareness, in tools around it, in ways to convert data into that format, and in you know, the vector database becoming de facto a standard piece of infrastructure that every company has, whether it's at the core of what they do and they are a search engine and that's how they work, or maybe they're a shop, you know, the retail site, and that's just how their recommendation carousel works, whether it's, you know, in their spam classification or in their text semantic search. It'll be somewhere for almost every company very soon.
Ido Liberty, the founder and CEO of Pinecone. Thanks so much for joining us today on Humane.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Humane Podcast. Did the episode measure up to your thoughts on ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education? Share your thoughts with me at humanepodcast.com/contact. Remember to share this episode with a friend, subscribe and leave a review, and listen for more episodes of Humane.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big.